Hi, everyone. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'm the managing partner here at Big Rio and Demo Consulting and the co-host of the Big Unlock podcast. A very warm welcome to all our listeners for this next episode of Season 7. And today we are really excited to welcome back Dr. Droy Schoenberg to our podcast. He's been on Season 3, Episode 94. He's the co-founder of Amwell and a pioneer who helped bring telehealth into the mainstream of US healthcare. And under his leadership, Amwell became a foundational platform for health systems and payers navigating the shift to virtual and hybrid care. Dr. Schoenberg is a physician by training, and he has operated at the intersection of clinical care, technology, and large-scale healthcare transformation. He is now focused on his next venture, Eileen.ai, exploring how AI can further reshape care delivery and decision-making. And with that introduction, I'll hand it over to you, Roy. Thank you so much for joining us today here.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for the very, very kind introduction. I learned things about myself. This is great.
Good to know. So it was really good to see you at HIMSS and hear more about Eileen. And I'm sure today we are going to hear much more because it's been launched now. But we'll start with the first question with Amwell. So Amwell invested early in building a platform model for virtual care. But we are seeing that many health systems are still struggling to operationalize telehealth beyond these siloed use cases. So looking back, what do you think were the biggest mismatches between how you envisioned platform adoption and how health systems actually implemented it? And if you were doing this all over again, then what would you do differently to kind of close that gap?
Wow, that's a good couple of loaded questions. I think that at the very highest level, I think that the notion of delivering care over technology, you can look at it in two ways. One, you can look at it as just another channel for the same encounter to take place over a technological channel, or you can look at it as more of a switchboard that allows you to completely reshuffle how services are acquired and delivered. So the application of model number one is I am your doctor and we have a follow-up appointment and it's going to be carried out not in the office, it's going to be carried out through telehealth. And that creates convenience to a lot of people, some level of efficiency, I guess. And I think that's the majority of how health systems are utilizing this technology today. I think that the desire or the vision behind it is to give it wings and say, well, instead of just executing the same thing that was in the office through technology, maybe we can democratize the availability of services in a much larger scale. To give you an example, if you happen to live in Boston where I live, cancer care is very available. We have Dana-Farber, we have Mass General, we have a couple of great places. Well, the knowledge of those clinicians that are there could be made available to either oncology patients or even primary care physicians who operate in West Texas or in North Dakota or in other places that don't have those large cancer centers. And this is just an example, but if we created the supportive logistical framework to allow for skills to flow over technology, you know, to the end of the earth, so to speak, you are rewriting the healthcare experience altogether. Now, obviously, there's a lot of muscle memory in healthcare that makes this challenging. Health insurance, medical licensure, credentialing, and variety of other elements that stand in the way of this notion of market forces that will fuel this. I still think that this is inevitable. But if there's anything that I would say is that I think that we, like many, many others, underappreciated the protectiveness of the health system from those kind of changes. But I think the train is out of the station. I think that, you know, maybe even post-COVID, the understanding that healthcare will be redistributed through technology is bigger than everybody at this point. So we're very proud of where we got.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. It started with COVID, normalized virtual health and telehealth. And now with AI, we're really hoping to see this taken to the next level and become kind of transformational. So along the same lines, you know, we are seeing that Amwell was built as a platform, but now with these AI native companies emerging, do you think the future still belongs to platforms or do you think, you know, it's going to belong to these more vertically integrated AI driven solutions that are going to kind of come into healthcare?
Well, I think, you know, we used to have conversations about whether cloud or web farms or server farms, you know, conversations of 15 years ago, and that conversation completely disappeared, you know, at this point. Nobody is in their right mind is going to operate a server farm. I think the conversation about platform versus vertically integrated is also going to become, you know, very quickly a hindsight, because people are going to care more about how the transition of any one patient is going to take place between different elements of care. AI will become probably the surrounding technology. So the first thing that you're going to do, or the most accessible healthcare interaction that you're going to have, even when you have a follow-up care, is going to come through AI just because of the economics of it. The magic will be, and how does AI work in concert with other vertical systems for either follow-up care or services, diagnostics, hospitalization, and so on. I think that there's a lot of focus right now on, can AI be a doctor? You can phrase it any way you want, but is it smart enough? Does it know enough? And so on. And the narrative around it is, if it can be a doctor, if it can be as good or knowledgeable as a doctor, then of course we're going to go to AI, right? Because it's very accessible. And I think that's a little bit of an underestimation of the complexity ahead of us. There's a lot of sentiment about seeing a doctor in person. You can trivialize AI by saying, oh, it's just a chatbot, which doesn't give you any level of reassurance. B, I think that the groundbreaking event that is still ahead of us that will dramatically change the way healthcare operates with AI is when the payers are going to introduce an insurance product that will force you, if you sign up for that insurance, to interact with AI first. So a little bit like what they tried to do with the HMOs in the 80s, where they had a gatekeeper model, right? The PCP was the gatekeeper, and that didn't go well for a lot of different reasons. It was not popular. It sounded too restrictive and so on. But what they tried to do is they tried to say, let's control the entry point of a patient into the healthcare system. And if we do that effectively, we can potentially control consumption and, you know, where they get referred to and all of that kind of stuff. The same logic applies to AI. If we are able to make sure that patients, first of all, interact with a very knowledgeable technology that is influenced by what we know is economical and of quality and everything else, then we have another opportunity to influence their journey of consumption of healthcare and experience of healthcare. But it's not going to be by convincing patients that AI is better than a doctor. It's going to be because if they choose the product that requires them to use AI, they will save a lot of money. And I think that, you know, it may sound cynical, but it is a very big influence on how people consume healthcare. How much does it cost? How much comes out of pocket? The more, and my sense is that it's not going to be a black and white thing. It's going to be a product that says, the more you use AI, the more you save. It will be a shared saving model. And it will have to be designed, that insurance product will have to be designed very smartly by saying there is AI, and if the sky falls, then you can break the glass and actually see a clinician and then come back to AI. So they'll design the product in a smart way. But my bet is that that is how AI would begin to dominate our experience as patients.
Yeah, I think that's a great perspective. And I think we do see it heading in that direction, because now with ChatGPT and, you know, with OpenAI and Anthropic saying that, you know, health is one of the biggest, like the number of questions that people are asking. I think 30 to 40% of all queries on ChatGPT right now are about health. And they're not even, you know, necessarily doctor-related questions, but they're questions about people who want to be prepared for their doctor's appointment. So they're like asking, you know, the chat, but like, tell me what I can ask the doctor to be better prepared. And so, yeah, I think that that's really interesting that you see patients going there first and then only in extreme cases having actual access to a clinician. If AI can handle everything else, then why even do that?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay. That's a great answer. I think now we can, you know, start talking about Eileen, I think, because that's, we were so curious and so that was such an interesting product that we heard from you. So what insight or frustration from your experience at Amwell, you know, led directly to the founding of Eileen? And what is the problem here that you're solving that is so fundamentally different from telehealth? Because this is also remote and this is also talking to patients virtually. But what do you... the biggest mind shift there is, and, you know, tell us more about Eileen. We would love to hear.
Sure. So first of all, I'll say the motivation. I'll talk about the motivation to build Dailene. That had nothing to do with Amwell or telehealth, but I would say that there's definitely a corollary. There's definitely similarity in the challenge between Amwell and telehealth and Dailene, in the sense that it is, you need to socialize, you need to get people comfortable experiencing a certain dimension of their healthcare through technology. With telehealth, it was the place of service changed and the mode of interaction changed. Here with Dailene, it's essentially the visceral connection that you need in healthcare that's now going to be furnished by AI instead of by labor, by people. And, you know, it all started, and I don't want to be too long about it, but it all started with a very, very interesting academic conversation about what's the role of AI in healthcare. And, you know, there've been a big group at the table that talked about how it's going to, you know, change the way information is analyzed and packaged and communicated and, you know, reminders and, you know, all of that fun stuff that, you know, scribing and all the things that we know AI to do. And just to keep the dinner interesting, I actually took the contrarian approach and I said, well, I think that AI has a role in changing the interface between technology and people in healthcare. And specifically, the most challenged population that you can think of in terms of healthcare and technology are seniors. There's clearly a need for it because there's a reality of caregiving that is very, very scary. That is very daunting. We have more and more seniors as a part of the population, you know, in the next decade or so, doubling and tripling in size. And at the same time, the number of caregivers available to them is actually going the wrong way. It's going the other way. It's diminishing. People don't want to do senior care. It doesn't pay much. It's emotionally and physically draining. So Houston, we have a problem here in terms of caregiving. And the thinking is maybe AI can step into that void, growing void, and become supportive to seniors. Now, that part is not actually terrifically creative because there's a whole world that we call age tech that is designed to do that. I mean, and these are thousands of applications who have all of their heart in the right place. They're trying to help self-sufficiency and support seniors and remind them of the things they need to do. And they come in very wonderful shapes and sizes. Some of them are chatbots, some of them are talking orbs, and some of them are talking pill boxes. I mean, they're all wonderful designs. But I think the general sentiment is that because of the love-hate relationship between seniors and technology, most of these technologies die on the vine. They either don't create adoption, or they don't create staying power. They create fatigue and eventually they just never get utilized to the point that we haven't cracked that nut. And Dailene steps in and says something really, really simple. It says, well, if technology is to have a regular influential role in the life of a senior, then maybe our first order of business is not to tell them what to do, but to establish a regular presence in their daily lives. And something that is going to be sought after, something that is going to be part of their regular daily routine that they would want to interact with. And if we are successful in creating technology that has that staying power in their daily lives, then through that technology, we can communicate medication reminders, appointment reminders, eat this, do that, and all the rest of the stuff that we want to communicate to them. But the trick is that staying power in the life of someone doesn't come from reciting medication lists. Staying power, put the technology aside, staying power in my life comes from people that know me, familiarity, intimacy, the ability to talk about my kids and grandkids and to talk about where I come from and my joys and frustrations and relationships and likes and dislikes and so on. So the goal here is how do you get AI to become intimate? And that's actually a much bigger technological challenge than I think a lot of people give credit to it, because people mistake, they talk to ChatGPT and it feels like, oh, you know, it's a very casual conversation. It sounds like I'm talking to someone. But the reality is that to understand, for that technology to understand where you come from and to understand the name of your grandkids and whether, pardon my French, whether your dog peed on the neighbor's porch and that's a problem, requires a completely different level of orchestration. First of all, because it's not written anywhere. You know, AI is really wonderful when you can feed it with a lot of information.
Yes.
But nobody wrote the book about my dad. So if AI is supposed to know everything about my dad, there's really nothing for it to acquire that information from. And then secondly, if we talk about seniors, you know, AI is designed to respond to our prompts. Even the term prompt engineering tells you about the choreography. We write something in and AI comes back.
Yes.
Well, we know that that's not going to work with seniors, because if we're going to wait for seniors to prompt, we're going to be waiting for a really long time. So the whole way AI operates doesn't work here. And there's a couple of other of those major challenges, but the bottom line is that Eileen was designed to address them, to become a very, very intimate, very engaging, knowledgeable partner in the life of the senior, one that initiates the relationship on itself, doesn't wait for the senior to download an app or log in or pair with the internet or whatever it is. It actually uses the phone to call them. And the magic happens, by the way, like their kids are supposed to and their family is supposed to.
Yes.
And the magic that happens during the call is that it actually doesn't talk about healthcare, but rather talks and remembers and carries a conversation about what the senior wants to talk about the things that we know excite them or that they spend time on. It has intimate knowledge and a very, very deep commitment to deepen the knowledge about what they are interested and curious about and what makes them laugh or what are the stuff that they can't tell anybody and want to have a conversation about. These are the things that Eileen focuses on because its purpose is to have staying power, regular daily staying power in their lives. And then it is humble enough to understand that if it is able to do so, it's actually just a cog in the wheel. It's a mouthpiece to other technologies that can help remind them of their medication or tell them that watch certain symptoms or watch their level of anxiety and depression and confusion and do all of those other things that technology in healthcare knows how to do. But this one creates staying power. And that's what Eileen is all about.
Yeah. I remember when you told us about it earlier also, I was struck by that very different approach that you're taking, that it's not a wearable, it's not, you know, an app, it's not coming to you in some hi-fi thing. It's just a regular phone call like you would. And I really thought of my mom and how she interacts with technology. And I thought that, yes, she loves to get phone calls and, you know, that's something that she would do. So I think, you know, that's really a different path you've chosen. But I think that really makes a lot of sense when you're looking at the seniors and the age group that you're looking at. So
I would say one other thing. So we think about the simplicity of getting a phone call, but there's also an eye on how do you make this technology available to people? If you came up with something that requires installation, maintenance, or a technological learning curve, both the economics and the availability of the product would have completely changed. What we want to eventually end up is to be in a position where if you're a family who's growingly struggling with the heavy lift of being there for your parents who may live far away or out of sight, and you want to have something shoulder that burden with you, we need to be able to give you the opportunity to activate Eileen, and Eileen would start tomorrow morning. Whereas anything else that doesn't use the phone, that doesn't use a staple that the senior is familiar with, would require a completely different kind of orchestration, a completely different kind of cost, and would essentially make it significantly less useful to the people.
Okay.
So there's a lot of thinking about why we ended up with a kind of a schizophrenic technology where the back end of Eileen is rocket science AI, really, really science fiction kind of AI, whereas the front end of Eileen doesn't even need Wi-Fi.
Yeah. That's a really interesting way to think about it. And you also, I remember, had mentioned family groups, that Eileen will actually call the family members and learn more about the senior, and that's how it'll be able to communicate, right?
I think if the goalposts here are so much about intimacy, about knowing that senior and their reality, and we mentioned the fact that that's not documented anywhere. One of the wonders of AI is that we're actually able to say, okay, well, the people that know the senior are the son and the daughter, and sometimes the grandkids, maybe a neighbor, maybe a spouse is still involved and everything. The way that Eileen starts serving that senior is actually by reaching out autonomously, does it by itself, reaches out to those people who are close to that senior and carries out regular conversations with them over the phone to learn about the reality of that senior. And it has a very, very nonchalant, very disarming way of doing it. You don't have to schedule meetings or fill forms or anything like that. It just calls them up and say, you know, when you have a minute, let's chat. And then it begins to build an understanding of the reality of that senior. And once it crosses a certain threshold where it says, okay, I know enough, only then does it begin to call them and does that on a regular basis. And of course, at the end of the day, reaches out back to the son and daughter and say, hey, I spoke to your dad a couple of times today and he was really upset about the war in Iran or whatever it is, or, you know, he's very grumpy, but that's the usual way that he is, so everything is fine, you know, something like that. And I think we're at the very, very early stages of this, but the framework, the approach that we've taken in this very different mixture of technologies coming together on the different, you know, sides of Eileen seem to be attractive and interesting and plausible. And as I mentioned at the very beginning, we have to go there because we are facing a meltdown of caregiving. Mm-hmm. So we got to find a way for technology to help us.
Great. So usually we start with an origin story, but we didn't do that today. So I guess, you know, we have a few minutes left. I would love to ask you what brought you into healthcare. And with Eileen also, I see that you're really resonating with this topic. So I really wanted to ask you, like, what are your feelings about this? And how did you get into this intersection of healthcare and technology?
So I used to be a clinician and, you know, did the whole training and, you know, thought for a long period of time that being a practicing clinician is going to be the way I'm going to do it. But I was actually dabbling with technology since I was 12 years old. Actually, I stayed home from school. I had like a pneumonia or something, and my dad got me like a Commodore 64, which...
Wow, that's interesting.
People don't even remember that existed. I think it had 5K of memory. Yeah. So since then, I was kind of like programming and doing things. But the bottom line is that after training and becoming a physician and practicing, to me, the part that was really interesting about technology is that if you build it right, mm-hmm. you have the ability to change the life of people much more widely than if you have a very successful practice. And the other piece of it is that healthcare today, unfortunately, requires clinicians to be highly specialized, and they end up doing the same thing over and over again and getting really, really good at this. But some of the mission statement around healthcare of helping evolving the well-being of people becomes very, very siloed, becomes very myopic when you only do one procedure really, really well every day again and again and again. So technology became just a different pathway of realizing the same mission, which was to continually rethink how we can advance the well-being of people and how can we make the healthcare experience less painful. And it just ended up that I think today technology has a bigger wingspan than some standards of practice. And I'm not suggesting that this is better or worse. I think we need both of them. Mm-hmm. But I found my passion in health tech, and it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Great. I think we're almost at the end, Dr. Schoenberg. It's been wonderful chatting with you. And if you have any closing thoughts or, you know, any predictions for where you see AI going within the next year, we would love to hear. And the listeners would love to hear as well. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll just say this. I think that we're very young. I think that we get very excited about what AI can do. And I'm pretty sure that not unlike other technologies, there's going to be a long period of time of maturation. During that time, there are going to be mistakes. During those times, there's going to be things that we're going to have to worry about. But I think that the entrance of AI as a surround system for our healthcare experience is an inevitability. And if that is the case, if we know that we're going to go there, you got to start, put your foot ahead of the other and start walking. And that's exactly what we're doing. And, you know, it will take a village. We need the brain power and the creativity of other people. But we couldn't be more excited. I think we're going to change the world no less than what telehealth did.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Schoenberg. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Terrific. Thank you so much for having me.